Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you. I know that he's back.
Really?
Yeah, I'm back. And great to have everybody on board. Okay. We got a really good one on tap today. We've had a lot of really good ones lately. Got Phil Steele today, right?
We sure do. Have him on the line right out of the gate. Not wasting any time.
Well, good. Let's not waste any time, and let's bring in one of the truly outstanding football analysts who puts it in print. Phil, welcome. It is really great to have you with us on the show today. Thanks a lot for carving out some of your valuable time to be with us.
Sure thing. A real pleasure, Steve. And I heard that you and Jack Ham are going to be doing your 200th consecutive show or game together when Penn State plays Kent State. So congratulations on that.
Oh, it's very kind of you to even mention that. Thanks so much. My parents always taught me several things. One of them is work with somebody who makes you better, and I work with somebody who makes me better. Fair enough.
Awesome.
Hey, Phil, let's analyze where things are right now. When you sit down and you really do your breakdowns, what are some considerations that you bring into play that allows you to do your breakdowns, because your breakdowns end up being really accurate?
Well, the first thing I do, Steve, is I start writing the magazine the Sunday after Thanksgiving every year when some team season is complete. And we have a service that sends us the articles from about every team all day long, or every day, all during the football season. So I've just watched the season. I have my analysis of the team. But then I go back and read game by game, day by day, of how their season entailed. And really, you pick up a lot. So I pick up a lot on the individual positions, make all my notes, and put it in that first write through. Then I do a second write through of the magazine, which is a pre-spring. Now we've got the freshman signees are in, get to all the pre-spring stuff from this prospectus. The third write through is after watching the spring game, and I talk to as many coaches as I can post-spring, which is a big advantage to have as well. And that's when I put sort of dot the I's and cross the T's on each team, make sure my projected starting lineups are where I want them. And so it's a three write through process, and I spend over 2,000 hours in the 6 months from November through June the 2nd, when we send that last page to the press, just working on college football.
When you cross the T's and dot the I's on Penn State, what were a couple things that you came up with?
Well, first of all, I think the offense fits what Coach Franklin wants to go to, and it's going to be more of the Oregon-style based offense. I like Trace McSorley, and Tommy Stevens it would be good as well. But the fact that the offensive line doesn't have to hold their blocks as long in the new offense, I think, is a plus. I like the skill players, Saquon Barkley. You look at the receiving core, Deshaun Hamilton, Chris Godwin, Cade Blacknell, and they're solid at tight end. I think the offense has the potential to be a much improved group this year. Then you look at them defensively. My question mark would be on the defensive line. They lose three pretty good guys up front, but the linebacking core is solid. You remember watching the opening game against Temple last year? They were shutting out Temple after one quarter. Then they even weren't when White went out of the game with injury, and all of a sudden Temple started moving the ball. It's good to have him back in the lineup, and the secondary looks solid. So I think it's a Penn State team with potential. They have a schedule which is tailor-made for either greatness or middle of the pack in the Big Ten East, because they get all the big boys at home. Michigan State, Iowa, Ohio State, all at home this year. That makes them a wild card in the Big Ten East.
You mentioned Ohio State and Michigan State in that answer. Michigan State's in an interesting spot, because I think Mark D'Antonio's done a great job to get them to this point. The question is whether they can rebuild in certain areas and sustain this high level. What do you see in Michigan State? Can they sustain a high level like they have been, or have we now seen them peak?
No, I think you're going to see him a legitimate contender in the East as well this year. And, you know, first of all, in my magazine, I always put a little more emphasis on the defense. I think most people look at quarterback, running back, receiver. I give like a 51-49 advantage to the defense. And if you do that with Michigan State, there really are no questions with them defensively. I mean, Malik McDowell, Raekwon McWilliams up front, Bulla and Reschke at linebacker. And then the secondary last year was all banged up. Vontae Copeland, their top cornerback, injured in the first game of the season, only had two starts. And then you look at the rest of the lineup, it was a hodgepodge due to injuries during the year. But now that secondary is going to be a strength. This could be one of D'Antonio's best defenses he's put on the field. Now, offensively, I think Tyler O'Connor can come close to Connor Cook's stats last year. I mean, he only hit 56% with a 24-7 ratio. L.J. Scott looks like one of the best running backs in the Big Ten. And I really like the addition of Donnie Corley, a receiver. And then the big thing with Michigan State this year is that Chip is back on the shoulder. You know, last year they opened up number 5 and rose as high as number 2, but they were barely getting past teams like Purdue and Rutgers, for crying out loud, weren't playing to their talent level. But when they were an underdog or the lower-ranked team, they did, with the exception of the playoffs. This year, everybody, including myself, picking them 3rd in the East, so I think that Chip will be firmly back on the shoulder. They get Ohio State at home. They get Michigan at home. They're going to be a dangerous team this year.
Yeah, I think they will be, too. And by the way, for fans, watch number 4, Malik McDowell, as Phil mentioned. It was an easy vote for me to put him on the preseason deal. I think he is absolutely outstanding. The burst that he has, and you talk about defense, that is where it does start.
Absolutely. And that number 4 makes him appear even bigger.
Yeah, it sure does. It makes him appear a lot bigger. Ohio State's in an interesting spot. They lost all these guys to the NFL draft, and they're still really, really good. There's been a lot of talent waiting in the wings. But let's not forget the veterans. Which of the veterans do you look at on the Ohio State team that then make the transition easier for some of that great young talent?
Well, the big one is JT Barrett. And, you know, you look at last year, I made a mistake, Steve. I went on all my radio shows. I do about 400 over the summer, and I said last year, Urban Meyer can't make a mistake at quarterback. I mean, they got JT Barrett, they got Cardale Jones, and if something happens, they got Braxton Miller. There's an old adage in sports, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one, but that doesn't apply to this year's Ohio State. Guess what it did? And, you know, JT Barrett and Cardale Jones splitting the snaps, neither one was as effective as they should be. Now it's Barrett's team again. Remember, just 2 years ago, this guy was 3rd in the nation in pass efficiency. I think he has a big year this year. Mike Weber is not a veteran, but I think he'll be a solid running back. And up front, Pat Elflein is one of the top centers for the upcoming draft. They got Billy Price up front. And you look at the defense. While Sam Hubbard's not a returning starter, he had 6.5 sacks last year. Tyquan Lewis had 9 sacks last year. Raekwon McMillan, one of the top linebackers in the country. This is a team that has had the top recruiting class in the Big Ten for 5 straight years. And so they have athletic talent is there. Now, they are number 128 out of 128 in terms of experience this season. And I think they take some lumps early, like at Oklahoma, potentially at Wisconsin, at Penn State. And ironically, it's back-to-back road games for Ohio State. Wisconsin and Penn State are both off a bye, heightening their home field advantage. And if they slip up early, I like the fact that at the end of the year, their inexperienced team will be a veteran group. And when they play their 2 biggest games, Michigan State and Michigan, they're no longer an inexperienced team. They're a veteran group. I think they play to their talent level then and win those 2 games, and that's why they're my pick to win the East.
Yeah, and then you mentioned Raekwon McMillan. Jack Ham's big on Raekwon McMillan. That tells me enough right there that the guy's quality.
Jack Ham know anything about playing linebacker?
He seems to know something about it. All right, Michigan's interesting because this is a team where it's a donut defense because they have an awesome front. I think they have a great secondary, and we don't know what they have at linebacker, but that's a really well-rounded team he's got there right now.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. And they bring in Don Brown. And Don Brown did a remarkable job at Boston College last year.
And he blitzes too, doesn't he?
Yeah, almost every play. And then at linebacker, I like the move. Jabril Peppers moves to linebacker. Everybody's using that strong side linebacker now as a quasi nickelback role. Here's your perfect player for it. Peppers can cover anybody. He likes to hit. He's got the decent size at 208. So I think just having Peppers in the linebacking core is a plus. My number 10 rated defensive line, number 8 set of defensive backs, my number 5 defense overall in the country. Up front, it's a veteran offensive line. Yeah, you look at the receiving core, they got Chesson, Darborough, and Butt. That's pretty solid. DeVian Smith emerged last year. And while there's question marks at quarterback, I like both guys. John O'Korn is 6'4", 280. He's a mobile QB that's got 13 starts under his belt at Houston. Wilton Spate, when I talk to the NFL guys this year, they're already looking at this guy for next year's draft. He's 6'6", 239, had a slight edge out of the spring. So I think no matter which quarterback wins a job, as long as there's one quarterback, they'll be in good shape there. And I think Michigan, when it's October 27th, is going to be the talk of the Big Ten. They're going to be 7-0. They're going to have seven pretty dominating wins. Penn State and Wisconsin, the toughest test that they have early on. And they're probably going to be number two or number three in the country. But look at their final five games. At Michigan State, at Iowa, at Ohio State. I think they drop a couple of those down the stretch. And that's why I didn't pick them to win the East, and I didn't put them in the national titles contenders role.
And Spate, by the way, is a guy that stepped into the Minnesota game last year and really played well. In fact, I think it's a big reason why they won the game when he stepped in last year.
Yeah, it was a big effort at the end, and they needed everything they could get at the end because they needed a stop against Minnesota at the goal line to hold on.
All right, nationally, obviously, there's a lot of names that come into play right away. Oklahoma, Alabama, Clemson. So it sounds like the same cast of characters as last year. When you look at those three in particular, are those the three we need to target right now, and is there somebody outside of those three that could break the party?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to list those three, and Alabama's got the best defense in the country. Of the Power 5 teams, Oklahoma's got the best chance of getting to the playoffs. There are no other top 10 teams in the Big 12. And then Clemson's got the best offense in the country and the probable Heisman Trophy winner in Deshaun Watson. I'm going to throw out two more elite names, though, for you, two teams that I feel are elite this year. One of them is LSU. And, Steve, you know Dave Aranda, and Dave Aranda knows defense. And, you know, he's had the number one defense at Wisconsin the last 3 years. In the country, I should say, the last 3 years, statistically, he inherits more talent at LSU than he's ever had to work with. You're looking at Arden Key and Kendall Beckwith at linebacker, Godchalk and Neal up front, Tre'Davious White at corner. They've got my second-rated defense in the country. And offensively, Leonard Fournette, a couple NFL-caliber receivers, and Trayvon Darrell and Malachi Dupree, my number five-rated offensive line. They just need slightly above-average quarterback play out of Brandon Harris, who's 6'3", 222, cannon for an arm, mobile, but he only hit 53.8% last year. Well, it's his third year as a starter. It's time for that light bulb to go on. Slightly above average quarterback play is all they need, and they're actually favored in all 12 games this year in Vegas right now, including a slight favorite over Alabama. And then the other team I'm going to throw at you is Florida State. Now, earlier we talked about how Ohio State's least experienced team in the country. That was Florida State last year, number 128 out of 128. Yet there they were in Death Valley, giving Clemson and Deshaun Watson all they could handle with that inexperienced squad. Now they get that Clemson game at home where they're 11-1 against Clemson in the last 12 meetings. Florida State's got 17 returning starters this year. They only lose 15 Letterman. Clemson loses 28. And I actually picked Florida State to win the national title this year, Stephen. I didn't talk to Coach Fisher prior to the magazine going out. So I was a little nervous when I called him this summer to go over his team because I wanted to hear what I wanted to hear. I heard what I wanted to hear. This team's three deep at basically every position. They are a loaded team, and I like Florida State's chances to run the table.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of things that settle very nicely into place, Phil, for them, and that's one of the keys that you look at. It's not just how much talent the team has back. You also take a long look at the schedule and how you have to negotiate the schedule. That's a key as to where you pick teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest with you, if Florida State was at Clemson this year, I would probably would have picked Clemson to win the national title. It's that right. Big of a difference.
Yeah, that's a huge difference, without question. And you mentioned LSU with Harris. Why hasn't the light bulb gone on for him, Phil? Because it seems like he's had so much in place around him, and then he's been the guy that's kept them from getting to the promised land.
Yeah, that is the big question because you got to figure defenses are keying on Fournette and Geis out of the backfield. And if you're throwing to a couple NFL-caliber guys in Darrell and Dupree and you've got a good offensive line protecting you, what the heck is the problem? And, you know, we're going to see. Phil Savage was saying that he had him in the Manning camp and Harris was still inaccurate there. He needs to improve it. He doesn't have to go out and be a superstar. He doesn't have to hit 65% of his passes, but he's got to do better than 53.8%.
Just a crystal ball. I know you analyze teams, and there's four in right now. Do you envision a time within 5 years that maybe they go to 8 in this thing?
Well, I might be a little prejudiced here, Steve, because I'd say 13 years ago I wrote my first article in the magazine about the BCS and what the perfect playoff system was. And it was 13 years ago I said the perfect playoff system is 14 playoff, 1 against 4, 2 against 3. The regular season stays the most valuable of any regular season in any sport. It does not become a battle of attrition in the playoffs, and you get the very best teams in the playoffs. You don't have to worry about some team that has two or three losses winning the national title. That plan, it took me writing about it 10 years. It finally came to fruition. Now we've had it for a couple years. I think it's done extremely well. I want to keep it at four.
I want to keep it at four as well, but you and I both know there's something called cash. So, Phil, this was a great pleasure. You do 400 of these. I know that. We worked hard to get you on because I just thought it was that important, your perspective, the magazine, and I hope it's not the last time. Thanks a lot for giving us a few minutes of your valuable time.
Yeah, let's do this more often, Steve. It was great talking football with you today. I love talking football with guys that know their stuff.
Same here. Thank you, Phil.
Thanks, Steve.
Phil Steele. Now, that is one of the best people right there. One of the best. You want to talk about somebody who knows their stuff. Okay? Knows it. Man, he's good. Our show today brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We'll come back with more in a moment. Still to come today, Kyle Peterson from the Little League World Series from ESPN and Matt Leon in Philadelphia. The show's far from done as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Still to come, Matt Leon from Philadelphia on the Eagles preseason opener, a little bit on the Phillies as well. That'll be in the next half hour. Then the Little League World Series gets rolling in South Williamsport on Thursday. Kyle Peterson of ESPN will be calling the games, including the International, USA, and Little League World Series championship games. He'll be a part of the broadcast team for all three of those, plus others along the way. Kyle Peterson from ESPN will join us at 4:06 today. So we have a big show on tap, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And a week from today, we're at Penn's Tavern. We're at Penn Tavern a week from today, and we'll have a special guest. How about that?
Pumped up.
A week from today, Penn Tavern. Can the week go by quickly enough here so we can get to that? I mean, I cannot wait to go there.
We are recharged and ready to go and just having Phil Steele on right out of the gate. Amazing.
Was he terrific or what? That's one of the best right there. I mean, I've had people ask me in the past, you know, how many magazines do you read? I don't read any magazines except his. That's it. I don't sit there and really go through. They're all, you know, general, how many starters back, blah, blah, blah. He actually analyzes it. Did you hear what he said at the beginning? It was the key part of the whole interview. I start writing about teams for next year, Thanksgiving weekend. Okay, that tells you that. Okay, that's not just taking a superficial press release and saying they got five starters back, including the quarterback. I'm going to make him first place. It's not what he does. Matt Leon, next half hour, KYW in Philadelphia on the Carson Wentz injury. Kyle Peterson, Little League World Series. They start in South Williamsport on Thursday. Should be a magical 10 days there as always. Great to be back. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Matt Leon, next half hour from Philadelphia.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's have served this valley for decades. Outstanding service. They take great care of you because they give you, along the way, the best insurance at the right price. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Full service insurance, by the way. Full service. Matt Leon in just a few moments. Then Kyle Peterson next half hour from ESPN on the Little League World Series. All right. Time now for this day in sports history. And one of the things, it's interesting, we've been watching the Rio Olympics. And, of course, Lochte got robbed at gunpoint. They tried to deny it. You're like, are they denying that? Weird. Oh, that didn't happen. Maybe it did. Oh, my goodness. All right. Let's get to this day in sports history, and we'll get back to the Olympics in a moment. Then Matt Leon. All right. It was on this date, 1984. Pete Rose returned to become the player manager of the Reds. How'd that work out? 1990, Mark McGwire hit a grand slam, 10th inning, to become the first major league player to hit 30 or more home runs in four consecutive seasons, his first four seasons. A's beat the Red Sox 6-2. Nolan Ryan, final victory of his career on this date when the Rangers beat the Indians 4-1. In 1995, career win number 324. And in 1997, the Dodgers retired Tommy Lasorda as number two. Tommy Lasorda is one of the funnier, more delightful individuals you'd ever want to be around. Something else. I've watched some of the Olympics, and naturally, of course, the suit had to get involved with some text messages. A lot of Phelps love. I don't know if you noticed that at all in your text message. Did you?
Yeah, suits a couple here and there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Going on, yeah.
Yeah, he was really patting himself on the back when he sent you a little historical nugget regarding Phelps breaking a record that's been held since BC time.
Yeah, I saw it. Well, the Olympics, of course, have been beset with Ryan Lochte and three other swimmers getting robbed at gunpoint. And then the pool turned green. The diving pool turned green. It reminded me of the great movie The Fugitive. Now, Joe Pantoliano played one of the marshals in the movie. Now, I've met him several times and I've talked to him several times. His daughter went to Penn State here. And there's a scene where it's St. Patrick's Day. Do you recall this scene, Sean?
That's right. He was Tommy Lee Jones' sidekick in the movie. Yeah.
Yes. So they're at the elevator. Now, he's not in the scene. Okay, but Tommy Lee Jones is in the scene. And Tommy Lee Jones, they're waiting to go up the elevator because they're trying to find Richard Kimball. And it's St. Patrick's Day. So the other two guys are sitting there and they're just yakking about how they turn the river green. They dye the river green in Chicago on St. Patrick's Day. Now, I've been there for it because the Big Ten tournament's been there at the same time. And thousands of people, Sean, turn out to see them dye the river green for St. Patrick's Day. And these two guys are standing at the bottom of the elevator with Tommy Lee Jones. They said, you know, if they can dye the river green on St. Patrick's Day, why can't they dye it blue the rest of the year? And I kept looking at the Olympic pool there. Just dye it blue or something. Do it. Oh, you know, Tommy Lee Jones actually was a really good athlete. You realize that? He was the starting guard at Harvard. I'm talking football. And the famous 29-29 Harvard-Yale game in 1968 that featured Brian Dowling, BD from Gary Trudeau's Doonesbury, Calvin Hill, Grant Hill's father, Bob Weinauer played with the Dolphins. These guys are all in this game. Harvard and Yale are both undefeated. The first time they've each been undefeated going into the game since 1909. Harvard falls behind, and Yale they were really good. I mean, Yale was actually ranked. And Yale jumps out to a 22-0 lead. And Harvard comes back to 29-13 with 42 seconds left. 42 seconds left, and Yale's winning 29-13. Harvard then scores 16 unanswered points. Touchdown, two-pointer, onside kick, touchdown, two-pointer. They tie it on a two-pointer at the last play of the game. Brian Dowling, Calvin Hill, helpless on the sidelines, can't get into the game. The Harvard Crimson newspaper on Monday, big headline, front page, Harvard beats Yale 29-29. Tommy Lee Jones played in that game. And you know what Tommy Lee Jones' roommate was at Harvard? Al Gore. I am today a bevy of thoroughly, completely useless information. All right.
No. We're just making up for lost time from last week.
There you go. So let's bring in Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Matt, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Great to be with you. Ivy League football is the best, though, isn't it?
Yeah. It's unreal. And they did a documentary about it 7 or 8 years ago about that game. It really is fascinating, that game. 29-29.
No question. And it doesn't get much attention. I'll tell you, the Ivy League, they've got a ton of kids in the pros now. I don't know how many kids are going to make it in NFL rosters, but they've got a lot of kids in training camp.
They do have a lot of guys in training camp. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Ivy League football because and I don't know if it's going to have any impact at all. Maybe it'll be a positive. But no full-out contact in practice during the course of the week under the new Ivy League rules. But remember, Dartmouth's been doing this for 4 or 5 years now, and they actually won an Ivy League championship doing that. So we'll see.
Yeah, and Dartmouth, I mean, they struggled forever. And the last couple of years finally turned it around. So that will be interesting to see. They are nothing but trendsetters, the Ivy League.
All right, so let's get an update on Carson Wentz. Obviously, this didn't turn out the way anybody hoped it would, so explain what happened and then where he is now.
Well, he took a nasty shot on, I guess it was his second to last play. And originally, after the game and into, I guess, Saturday morning, everybody just thought it was sore ribs. Doug Peterson was actually asked about it during the practice on Saturday morning and said it was just, as far as he knew, just sore ribs, and it turns out there's a hairline fracture, and they don't really have a timetable on his return. It sounds like people are hopeful that he could be back by the last preseason game. I think that's probably what people want to happen more than what is likely to happen. I don't think, given what you for him and what he means to the organization, you don't take any chances. I don't care how many reps he misses until he's completely healthy, but it completely, you know, this hasn't exactly been an exciting training camp to start, and he was the one really engaging storyline, and now that's kind of just sucked all the excitement out of the room.
Yeah, he was, without question. What were your takeaways from the opener against Tampa Bay?
Well, for him, I thought you saw a big arm, you saw a guy that could create, athletic, could take a hit. Didn't get helped at all by poor protection and guys that can't catch. But I think you saw the foundation, the building blocks as to why the Eagles, why a lot of teams liked him so much. But you also saw throws he liked to have back. You saw an interception in the red zone, some rookie mistakes. But overall, I think you had to like what you saw.
What were your overall takes on the Eagles as a team from the opener?
I mean, the defense was about what you thought, opportunistic, got after the quarterback. The offense, I just don't know what to tell you. I don't know what they're good at, and I don't know what they're going to be good at. And you throw in this, what looks like it's going to be a 10-game suspension for Lane Johnson, is, the best, probably their best player on offense, and you're right back to – having an offensive line that's suspect and kind of have a quarterback sitting behind that offensive line that's not mobile, an injury-prone starting running back, nobody established on the outside as far as a deep threat take. I mean, their longest game against the Buccaneers, I think, was 19 yards. I just don't see it on offense. I think the defense will be good. I think special teams will be a plus unit. But offensively, the thing I just keep saying to people is, what do you look at with that offense, and what do you say this is what they're going to be good at? You know, there's no reason to believe they're going to be especially effective running the football. They don't have any real big-time pass catchers. And, you know, Sam Bradford, I think, is a okay quarterback, but I don't think he's a guy that can carry it. And if he can't protect, it doesn't matter. So I got a lot of questions about the offense and the potential for the offense.
What is it about the defense that you like based on what you just said?
I like the front seven. I think they were a pretty good defense last year, especially up front.
Yeah.
They were just in a situation where the way the offense ran, you know, with that quick pace, where they would just keep getting put back on the field and they would play more snaps than anyone else, and it just, you could feel it getting run down as the season went on. But I really like the defensive line.
Obviously, there are a couple guys on defense that are go-to people. There are no go-to people on offense.
No, I think the guy that I would put, the only guy I would consider at this point is Zach Ertz, the tight end.
And, yeah.
He's a very good tight end, but he's not a Gronkowski. He's not a, you know, Jimmy Graham. He's not a transcendent type player at that position. I think he's a very good tight end, and I don't know if you can build an offense around a very good tight end. I mean, I was really disappointed Thursday in Nelson Agholor, the number one pick from last year. You just saw nothing out of him, and I know it's a small sample size, but when you have the rookie year he did and the quiet camp he has, you kind of really start looking. You need something to justify why you're here, and you didn't see that. I was disappointed in Reuben Randall. I thought he was a guy that, you know, could maybe step up, but you saw nothing leading you to that on Thursday. Now, once again, you don't want to overanalyze one preseason game, but you would also like some people to start opening your eyes, and you really didn't see that. And that's the thing. I think it's just a very nondescript offense. There's just no one, you know, and it is, while I like the defense, it is not the 85 Bears. It is not a team where you can score 14 points a game and feel good about yourself most weeks. And I just don't see it on offense, and it's not a situation where you sit and say, oh, well, this guy's hurt, they'll be fine. You look at it, and even when they're full strength, you're like, I don't know how they're going to move the football.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I think everybody should have learned a valuable lesson last year about overanalyzing a preseason game in the Green Bay Eagles preseason game last year. Well, look at that. Incredible. Guess what? It was, so what?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, this city went cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs after that game against Green Bay. And it was never that was really Sam Bradford's high point as an Eagles quarterback to this point was two drives in August at Lambeau Field. So, you know, like I said, with this game this past Thursday, you don't want to go too far the other way. But there's, you just haven't seen anything that gives any reason to believe that they are going to be a plus team offensively.
All right, one quick thing on the Phillies, who have won four in a row now. You know, they keep hovering in the neighborhood of 500. They aren't there, but what's your thought on where they are right now?
I think you got to like where they are a lot. I think that was a good series. That's a pretty good Colorado team, but Colorado team that can hit. Rockies remind me a lot of the Royals a few years ago, or a couple years ago, before they became more household names, where everybody that comes up, you feel like it's hitting 300 with 15 home runs. They're just up and down the lineup. They got good bats. And Colorado didn't play exceptionally well. I mean, they had a ton of errors in the series. They didn't pitch real well. But, you know, Phil's been playing very good for a while. And if you could take away that 1 month that they just went off the cliff from about Memorial Day till the third, fourth week of June, they might be in the wild card race, but there's a lot to like. Aaron Altair continues to play well since he's come back from injury. Guys like Cameron Rupp and Cesar Hernandez have improved their stock. Mikel Franco had a couple of big hits in the series against the Rockies. The starting pitching's taken a hit just because of injury. You lose a Zach Eflin, you lose an Aaron Nola. Hellickson had a back issue. Adam Morgan comes up from the minors promptly, gets hit with a line drive yesterday. So they're hurting a little bit there in the starting rotation. I think they've got enough depth in the system to put it together with spit and bailing wire here to the end of the season. But I'm telling you, I'm very, very bullish on the Phillies. I think the next few years are going to be a lot of fun watching this all come together.
I agree. Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Matt. Thanks for calling back.
No problem. Thank you.
Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Kyle Peterson next half hour from the Little League World Series. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com, selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. The Olympics have been pretty much like a clown show so far. Oh, I'm just kidding.
Well, you pretty much nailed the point spread on the men's basketball game, but boy, those last two games, three-point wins, woo.
Yeah. They're just not, I don't know. They're not very good in a couple spots. I mean, in terms of international competition. And a big part of it is teams have really pretty much figured if you take the U.S. out of their game flow, that's the key. Get the U.S. out of its game flow. Disrupt it. And that's what they've done. NBC has had pretty much everything handed to them on a silver platter that you could possibly ask for at the Olympics. NBC needed Phelps to be great. Phelps was great. NBC needed Katie Ledecky to be great. She was great. They needed Usain Bolt to be great. He was great. They needed the women's gymnastics team to be great. They have been great. I mean, they needed all that, and they got it all. The only thing that really has not gone according to Hoyle so far is the women's soccer team getting knocked out. That really is the only one so far where you're like, okay, that's interesting. I mean, Ryan Lochte got robbed at gunpoint. The pool turned green. Okay, it's fine. It's all good. Now, I think NBC's coverage has been great. I think the announcing's been really good, with one exception. And this is not about the announcing. This is about their choice. And again, you make choices. I do not understand at all why the women's gymnastics is not live. I don't get it. I don't get it. Why package it on tape? I don't really, you know, I already know the result. They're really not in the mood to watch. And not only that, did you notice in the preliminary? Now, this is when they were qualifying for the team. So they're qualifying for the team. All the dead time, they kept showing the women, the U.S. women, sitting there and waiting and talking and sitting there and waiting. I'm like, it's a taped package deal. Cut it out. Go to the next one. I mean, come on. If you're going to package it, don't make it seem like you're presenting it live. Don't bother doing that. Swimming's been live. It's been great. Track's been live. It's been great. women's volleyball at night. The beach volleyball has been great. Live. This is be the last live Olympics for 8 years. But then they packaged gymnastics.
Yeah, well, after Usain Bolt ran his 100 last night, they went to pre-recorded gymnastics to fill time before they went to beach volleyball.
Right. And so, I mean, I understand the timing and everything. But my point is, all right, like, take the preliminary. They kept showing them sitting and waiting for the next thing. And then they're talking about how in gymnastics it's such a waiting game. Not when it's on tape. When it's on tape, you don't have to wait. That was absurd. There's a lot of waiting in gymnastics. Not when you can edit out the waiting time. Everything else, they've been great. But you know what? You're playing too many games when it comes to, I mean, you have a chance to show it live. The IOC should, I don't care if they have to go out there and go on the uneven bars at 10 at night. Okay? They're paying enough. Show it live. I've done basketball games at 10 in the morning and I've done them at midnight. Why? Because TV said so.